Show your T-ball team spirit and buy your hardworking Art Lab team a cup of coffee, which helps fuel purchases of high-octane equipment and T-ball tech that get poured back into percolating, highly caffeinated content for you. Just go to buymeacoffee.com and search Therapy Bites.
On this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, have you ever wondered how Google is so good at finding you? Well, today's guest, Brandon Leibowitz, is a high-tech hitman specializing in telling Google how to locate you. Well, actually, he specializes in helping Google locate websites and products, but today he's turning his sights from simply sales to staying safe on the internet and, in particular, social media. Join us today for an episode called Online Insanity, Psychology of Social Media Quicksand.
Tuned following the interview for On the Couch and Off the Rocker, our special guest's psychosilly analysis by Art Lab's own head cabbager, Dr. Ima Freudnot.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
We're glad to have Brandon Leibowitz in the Art Lab today. We're going to discuss the wild and wacky world of social media, some social media insider secrets, using social media as a tool without letting it take over your life or your kids' lives, and maybe some little-known social media hacks. Brandon has been involved in digital marketing since 2007 and generously shares his knowledge about SEO, search engine optimization, social media marketing, and Google Ads. He operates SEO Optimizers through a digital marketing company that focuses on helping small and medium-sized businesses get more online traffic, which in turn converts into clients, sales leads, and et cetera. And he's going to share his knowledge today about online insanity, the psychology of social media quicksand.
Stay in the stands at the end of the interview, T-Ballers, and witness our special guest slug a bite-sized brain ball with your name all over it, clean out of the Art Lab.
Brandon, man, thanks for being on the episode today. We're looking forward to talking to you about all your expertise, being an internet hitman, helping a lot of websites out there get hits from Google. But I have a question starting out, and I actually just came up with this one as I was, really brushing my hair on the way to this episode. And this is something I've noticed. I don't mean to sound like a paranoid lunatic, but I have Alexa devices throughout my house. And me and my family have noticed we'll be talking about something. We won't say the name because we have one of her in the room with us and she'll speak up. But Alexa, and we'll be talking without calling that name. And then all of a sudden we'll notice seemingly Amazon, Google too. I'm holding up my cell phone. We'll start pushing that content to my cell phone. Now, that could be on purpose or by accident, but it just seems a little bit spooky.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just they're tracking everything. Once you sign up for any of these platforms, they listen to everything you do. They read all your emails. That's why Gmail is free. It's not free for a reason, because they need to make money, so they read the emails or look for words. Like, if the word Nike is in your email, Google will tell, hey, Nike, you want to advertise? Or, hey, Adidas, do you want to try to steal this competitor's traffic and advertise against them? But yeah, no, they're all doing that because it works so well. It's very, very effective.
You know, that seems actually a little bit scarier than the first Terminator movie, because the Terminators would come to kill you, but there's nothing in there about them reading your email.
They're probably reading your mind. They're body scanning you. They can read everything else. Like, emails are, we're going to figure out what's really going on, because we got way more advanced detection nowadays.
That was back in the late 80s or something, and things have just increased exponentially since then. But we have, by the way, a couple of fellow clinicians in the Art Lab today. We call her Squirrel Girl Debbie because she used to have a pet squirrel for about, 8 or 9 years. And I guess now A-L-E-X-A, I'll spell that out because there, if I'm talking about this device, she listens to me and then asks me questions. And so I'll just spell it out. But now we'll start having content pushed to us about squirrel ownership or something. And then Bookworm Sarah, they're licensed clinicians also. But what was it that drew you to the wild and wacky world of internet commerce?
I wasn't planning on it, but just fell into it after I graduated, got my degree in business marketing. The first job I got at school was helping a company out with their digital marketing and kind of doing it all for them, helping out with like SEO, search engine optimization, doing social media, doing paid ads, doing email marketing, kind of helping them out with everything. And this is back in 2007, and after working there for a few months, just kind of realized that everyone's probably going to have a website in the future. There's a lot of different ways to get traffic, but SEO is just a way to get free traffic. So really kind of tapped into the search engine optimization and social media, the organic side of things, just trying to get you free traffic, because I thought, why spend money on paid ads if you get up there for free? And worked at different advertising agencies over the years, and before work or after work or on lunch breaks, I would work on my own company and built it up to where I was able to eventually quit my job and focus solely on this, and been doing that ever since and helping people just get that free traffic.
It's really both a very different language and a art form, would you say?
Yep, you got to definitely learn all the terminology. There's a lot of weird words out there, but once you pick it up, it becomes like second nature. Just like I feel like with coders, they got to learn a whole new programming language, which I try to stay far away from that. But once they figure it out, it seems like it's pretty easy for them to navigate through it. But it's just that learning curve.
Or do you find it that it's actually very doable? I don't mean this to be a trick question, but do you find that it's actually very doable to tell, I guess, what are you doing? Telling Google to find a certain website for a certain reason at a certain time for a certain purpose?
It's all about relevancy. So whatever someone's searching on Google, if they're searching for Italian food in Los Angeles and you have a website, but you're in, let's say, San Diego and you have Italian food, Google's going to say, no, you're not relevant. You're too far away. But if you have a website and you're in Los Angeles and it says it on your website and it mentions Italian food, then Google reads that and sees that you're relevant to that search term. And hopefully we'll show you in the search results. I mean, there's a lot of other variables, but it all comes down to relevancy. The more relevant your website is to the search term, the more likely you're going to get that visibility and exposure.
And there seems that there's some people that are better at searching out stuff. I find folks that they don't have a clue about how to find a certain thing on the internet. And by the way, here's a spoiler alert for Boba Fett. You Boba Fett fans out there watching on Disney, you can mute it and come back later. The final episode we're watching, there was a character, and I could not remember his name. My son could not remember his name, and my son searched it and said his name is whatever. I actually don't remember at this point. I do remember at this point, but I won't say it. But he searched him out, and I said, gosh, how did you find that? And he said, I searched whatever color the guy was, blue alien bouncer hunter guy, and it popped up this guy's name. It's really amazing, number one, that it does take a bit of skill to do a Google search, but then also it's amazing that probably Disney has done some search engine optimization knowing that people are going to look this stuff up.
Yeah, but searching is not that hard. As long as you're descriptive, that's all that matters. You could put one word in there, you put 50 words in Google, and the more words you put in there, the more likely they're going to find what you're looking for. If you just put one word like Disney or Boba Fett, they're not going to know what you're looking for. But the more you put in there, the more descriptive it becomes, the more targeted and more easier it is for Google to actually pull that out and display you the correct term. So don't overthink searching. Just the more you put in there, the better. It's pretty easy once you do it. And there's a little learning curve, but it should only take a couple hours, because once you get the hang of it, it's really easy to search on Google and all these platforms. It's just being descriptive, or you just speak into your phone And you can just go on Google on your cell phone and just ask the question. Like you said, what is the guy's name that's on this show? And the more descriptive you are about that person, the more likely Google's going to show you that result.
Or I wasn't planning on asking this, but one of the coolest words I learned back in, gosh, what was it? 1996, I think it was, a million years ago. I actually went to an internet course when the internet was pretty brand new, and they talked about Boolean operators, and are those still used, or those kind of become prehistoric?
No, I still use them, and there's these like advanced search operators where if you put quotation marks around something, it means it has to find it in that exact word, that order, that spelling. It can't be misspelled. Because if you search on Google and you misspell every single word, they're going to fix it for you. But if you put in quotation marks with the misspellings, they're going to keep it as is verbatim, or you can put brackets to make it exactly that phrase. But I'd say 99% of people never use that. I just do it because I do SEO. But if I'm just searching on Google normally, I would never use those. But for SEO, definitely to get more targeted and more hyper kind of results that I'm looking for. But in general, you don't need a new do any of that stuff. Maybe 20 years ago when Google was first coming out, but nowadays they're really smart and they're able to pick up, because half the searches nowadays on Google are brand new that Google's never seen because of cell phones, because of voice searching. In the past, you just type into Google Boba Fett character. But when you have your cell phone, you can talk to it, you can say, what is a Boba Fett character that looks like this, this, this on this show, on this episode? And you have like a 20 word search. And that's going to become very, very targeted and get you exactly what you're looking for.
Now, this leads us into the real topic of our episode. And Debbie has a follow-up question to this, I know already. But I've heard of searching too non-specifically, pulling up things that you don't want to see, things that you don't want your spouse to see, things that you don't want your kids to see. An example that comes to mind, and please, guys, don't leave this episode and go do this. I'm giving you the warning right now, don't do this. But someone told me that they searched for, I think it was White House. They were doing a report on the White House, and they typed that in and got some pornographic site. Now, I didn't try that, but that's just what someone told me. I don't know if that's really true or if it's just anecdotal, but do you find that there's a danger of people doing searches and then it just feeds them stuff that they really don't need to see or hear?
You can put safe control on. So you can just click a little button saying safe control or child enable, just like parental guidance or anything like that, where it takes all that stuff out. But if you're typing White House in, I would think Google would show you White House, the presidential. But Google looks at your past history, and if all you're looking at pornography sites, then Google's going to think that you're trying to find White House, the pornography website. But they'd also show you the White House government first, because they don't know which White House you're looking for. But they're probably going to show the White House, United States first, and then that pornography site might have been a little bit higher for that person because they look at a lot of pornography, because Google looks at all your search history, where you're located, what browser you're on, if you're on Safari, Internet Explorer, Firefox, if you're on cell phone versus desktop, iPhone versus Android. It's all going to be slightly different. But Google tries to personalize the results. So I'd be a little weird about what that person's searching for in the past.
Okay. Yeah, if you're listening up, your searches can tell on you, because I guess you're saying that the algorithm makes assumptions of what you're looking for based on what you have recently or historically been looking for.
Yep. Just like all the platforms, social media, anything is going to try to personalize it, because they know once they personalize it, you stay there longer. And hopefully click on ads and make Google more money, because that's all they care about.
Well, that makes so much sense why I'm getting all these ads of taking a Disneyland vacation. It assumes that since I'm watching Boba Fett, I want to go to Disneyland. Which I do, Disney. But guys, Disney, listen up, give me a really good deal and we'll go. But so far, the deals haven't been that great, but you can keep on trying. We loved it. It's not a promo episode. I don't have any affiliate relationship with Disney, but yeah, I do love Disney. But Debbie,
that's really funny.
There's ways to get discounts, actually. If you go to Google Disney, sign up, fill out a cart, and then don't check out, you become a cart abandoner, and they're going to probably give you some good discounts, because any website that does any advertising, anyone that goes to a shopping cart, doesn't check out, they follow them around with those ads, and they usually give you an incentive. Like if you go on Amazon, you look at a product, you don't buy it, but you add it to the shopping cart, they're going to really push that ad as much as they can, because you're that close to making that purchase, but something distracted you, and that usually works pretty well on most websites. So I would try that.
Wow. See, guys, Brandon is making you money already just by tuning into the episode. You can make money by saving money, abandon your cart, and then get all kinds of cut rate deals. That's, I may try that.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have to try that with, it's kind of funny when you talk about social media. When I graduated from grad school, all of a sudden on Facebook, constantly I was getting advertisements for doctoral degrees for seniors at discounted prices. Maybe I should have like signed up for one and abandoned it. Maybe I'd have got a discount.
Well, they think you're an old person.
Huh? They apparently do. They apparently do. It cracked me up. I thought, what is this? It's funny. But, you know, when you look at the internet and social media, you know, both of those things, do you think they help people or sabotage people's lives? And in what way? In what way are they helpful or do they sabotage, in your opinion?
It just depends how you use it. But the internet's definitely made everyone more connected, helped out. Social media's connected everyone and made it so you can connect with anywhere, anyone, anytime, anywhere, which is pretty nice. Yeah. But if you do it the wrong way and try to cause division, then that's doing it in the wrong way. But there's always going to be bad apples no matter what. So the internet's never going to be perfect. Social media will never be perfect. There's never going to be anything perfect, because there's always going to be some people that try to infiltrate it and try to stir the pot and cause some negativity. But as long as you're doing it the right way, then it's going to definitely benefit you, because now you have all the answers to any question at your fingertips anytime. You can see where any restaurant is and get reviews about restaurants and see pretty much or learn about anything that you want to learn, and watch YouTube videos. You can learn about anything for free almost nowadays, whereas you don't necessarily need to go to school. I mean, it still helps out, but everything's up there. I mean, I put all my classes that I used to charge for about SEO, digital marketing, up for free on YouTube, so people could watch anytime and see how to do it and hopefully take action, which unfortunately most people don't take action. But giving all that stuff away for free, and that's the nice thing, is you can just learn anything and connect with anybody anytime. I feel like those two are the best, and do video and being able to connect with friends and family across the globe.
And you know, while we're on the topic of social media, have there been any things that you've personally had to overcome when it comes to managing, you know, the amount of time you spend on social media?
From my clients, some of them want me to post like 8 times a day.
Wow.
So I'm just like on Facebook or 8 times a day on Twitter and 8 times a day on Instagram, separate posts. Like, it's a little overkill, but it depends what you're doing. Like for an SEO company, you probably don't care. Not hearing from me that often, but if it's like a sports or entertainment or Disney, stuff like that, you'd be like, sure, post 20 times a day. I'm not going to be mad, but just about balancing it out and figure out how to get your time and allocate time to actually posting all that content, engaging and being social on social media, which is really the most important part, because not many people are actually social on social media. They're just posting media content all day long, but they're not engaging. And if you're not engaging, it's going to be tough to get that organic growth.
What's the difference there between posting and engaging? You said you can post but not be social. What would be the difference between posting versus being social?
Well, it's called social media. Media is posting images, videos, whatever it is, type of content. Social means engaging with people, liking their pictures, commenting, retweeting or favoriting or resharing or whatever platform you're on, but commenting, DMing people, not spamming them, but engaging with them, responding to DMs and just being social, which not many people do the social part of social media. A lot of people just post all day long without thinking about their audience and how to nurture that audience and engage it.
Speaking of being social, how would you recommend that people handle comments in social media that may not be very courteous?
You could set up filters to just have those automatically removed, or you could respond to them, but might be better, depending on how bad it is. Just have little filters saying if it has this word or these words in it, just take it down. But it just depends on what settings and depends on what type of channel you want. If you want an edgy channel, then maybe you want some of those up there, but depends. If you're more family based, you probably don't want any profanity in there.
Okay. All right. Well, good. Well, what about some social media etiquette? What do you recommend to people as far as keeping yourself in check and practicing what I've heard is social media etiquette?
I'll just be like treating people like you do in the real world. Just don't be rude and don't make all these fake accounts and spam people, but just be or treat people like you want to be treated. Essentially, just the golden rule, treat others like you want to be treated. And if you're doing malicious things on social, just know that might come back around and have that same repercussions on you. But just be nice to other people and you'll see other people will be nice to you.
Do you think that accounts with big, big numbers of followers really makes that much difference? You'll see some accounts that have thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of followers. What kind of difference does that number really make?
Well, it gets you more visibility and reach. So when you're posting organically, well, you used to get more reach. Nowadays, most of these platforms don't show you to your audience unless you pay to play. So when you post on Facebook, let's say if you have 10,000 follow or 10,000 likes, only 5% of those people will ever see what you post without you having to click that blue little button anytime you post and saying, boost this post up and show it to everyone. So in the past, the numbers mattered, and it depends what platform you're on. The numbers matter more than others. Like Instagram, you might get 20% reach, still really bad. YouTube, you probably made a lot more than that to your subscribers. So having more subscribers will help out, but it just depends because the bigger audience, the more people that will hopefully see your content organically. But most of these platforms need to make money. And the way to make money is not showing your content to everyone that follows you or likes you or subscribes or whatever platform you're on, friends you. So it just depends. But I would say bigger numbers are going to definitely help out if the real fake followers don't do anything, but real followers are very beneficial.
Well, now that was part of my question. I'm glad that you brought that up because I heard somebody from Edison Research was talking, and they said if you see an account that, number one, has a lot of followers, hundreds of thousands, even maybe tens of thousands, and number two, it's fairly new, he said probably they paid for those followers. And what a lot of listeners may not realize is that a lot of these big numbers on a Instagram account, particularly maybe, I think that's one I'm most familiar with, Instagram, there are platforms that if that, quote, influencer, I have trouble with that term, influencer, I wonder kind of what they're influencing sometime, but that influencer has actually paid somebody to use thousands of fake accounts to boost their numbers. And a regular user would never know. They just see the influencer's name. They see that they have 32,000 followers, not realizing they really could have paid for half or more, two-thirds of those. What do you think about that?
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
Individual psychological concepts are very different animals from one another. And while they are often readily observable in the wild, the Therapy Bites Art Lab Zoo affords us a unique opportunity to study them in a safe and controlled environment. Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Creature Feature. Oh, good heavens!
You know, I just don't know if I want to do this today. I'm just feeling really, really sad. I'm not sure why I'm feeling sad, but it's just so intense. I don't know if I even want to do the creature feature today. I might just put the microphone away and go home. It's going to be a long trek through this rainforest, but, you know, I don't know if I can do it today. I don't think I want to do it today. Oh, hey, T-Ballers. Welcome to this week's creature feature. I'm your host, Safari Sarah, and if you haven't already guessed it, the creature for today is the sadness gray herring, okay? So how can sadness be a gray herring? Sadness is a natural, healthy emotion that humans are meant to experience, right? Well, that is true, But if we are focused more on our sadness than we are on what we're telling ourselves, that is, red alert, red alert, that's a danger. We don't want to tell ourselves that if I'm sad, I can't do anything. If I'm upset, that means that I should just stay at home and in bed. Really, I'm going to go a little bit into behavioral activation here too, which is when we choose to do something regardless of how we feel. So behavioral deactivation is the quickest way for us to experience depression, okay? If we decide that we're so sad that we don't want to get out, don't want to do anything, and we let that line of thought keep us at home, that is a really good way for us to become even more sad or even more depressed, and it's not healthy for us. The healthiest thing for us to do, even if we're experiencing intense sadness, is yes, we need to grieve, but we also need to continue on with our routine and our daily life. We need to keep things as normalized as possible, not avoiding the sadness, but not letting the sadness keep us isolated and not focusing on the sadness alone. What's important is our thoughts. So practice those arties, those accurate, realistic thoughts, even in the midst of sadness and grief and difficulty. I know you can do it, T-ballers, and I'm here rooting and cheering for you. You've got this. Thank you for joining this creature feature, and I'll see you in the next one. Please enjoy the rest of the episode.
Thank you for joining us for the Therapy Bites Art Lab creature feature.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
You're slipping beneath the cushions of your bobble-headed psychotherapist's couch, leaving behind empty, echoing, cushy, comforting, pseudo-psychological claptrap, moving into a deeper dimension of your own mind, where distorted thinking, hurting, hopelessness, and regret evaporate into clarity, healing, renewed hope, and newfound resilience. That's the podcast sign up ahead. Your next stop, Therapy Bites Psych Secrets.
Hey, T-Ballers, Doc Heath here, psychotherapy duck in disguise, to share with you some reasons hard things are brain healthy. Quack, quack, listen up here. Neurologically, hard things acclimate your brain to difficulty. Number two, physiologically, they normalize internal physical processes and reduce amygdala, that's your fight or flight system, reduce amygdala activation. And number three, cognitively, they allow you to program your thoughts away from pseudo-threat quicksand. T-Balders, listen to your psych secret for this episode. Give your brain hard things to do. It'll be healthier because of it, and more resilient because of it. Doc Heath and Psychotherapy Duck out. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Once again, Doc Heath rips the cushions from the couch, dishes the dirt, lets the cat out of the bag, uncorks the bottle, letting the genie escape, and blows the lid off of another of the universe's psych secrets.
Live the art life. Become a T-Ball Teammate Inner Circle supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/therapybites.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball Team.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people sell fake followers, but I help people get real followers by being social on social media. So there's a lot of different ways to get followers. And anytime you buy followers online, 99% of the time, it's going to be fake followers where these people just have a million email addresses, use it to create a million accounts. They'll put a profile picture up. They'll put pictures up, videos up. So it looks like a real account. They'll put a description, a bio, all that stuff. But they're actually fake ghost accounts is what they call them. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do much for you. And Instagram or whatever platform you're on is going to find them and eventually delete them. So, and they're not going to engage with your content, which also doesn't help. But the way I like to get people followers is by being social on social media. So if you have an account, let's say you have a fan page for Disney, what I would do is I go in and follow anyone that follows Disney's main account, because from your account, because then they're going to get a notification saying this account followed you, the Disney fan page. And this person is already following Disney, so they're definitely interested in Disney. And they see that your notification that they followed them, that usually gets them to follow you back. So stuff like that works really well to grow organically. And I've done that to grow my own accounts and clients' accounts to tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of real followers, no fake followers, all keeping it organic, never spend money on paid ads, but just by being social, which again, a lot of people are not social on social media. And if you're not social, it's going to be tough to grow organically. Unless you're a big brand like Disney, you don't really need to be too social because
you have all the TV shows and movies.
Yeah. Yep. They got other things that get them that engagement. But for a small, medium-sized company or person that's trying to get some more visibility, engaging with targeted people are going to get them to hopefully and usually follow you back.
What are some of the steps that you found or keys to success for companies staying safe in social media? Because I don't watch the news much, but I've seen things on the news where even companies get into hot water because somebody posts something on social media and then it becomes some big news story and people lose their jobs and people are blacklisted or what do they call it, to cancel, the cancel culture thing. What are some safe practices for both businesses and people personally to avoid getting into hot water on social media?
Just don't say anything controversial. That's going to be the easiest thing. Just don't say anything that's edgy, controversial. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion. Just talk about fun, entertaining stuff because that's what people want to hear. They don't want to be, I mean, everyone's different, but most people are just there to get connected with friends, family. That's what social media is for. They're not there to look at ads or connect with brands. But nowadays, the brands are kind of infiltrated social. So it's a big part of it. But just making sure that you're saying messaging that's going to resonate with people. It's not going to hurt or offend people. And I mean, those are just mainly like the golden rule of life. Treat others like you want to be treated. Treat others on social media like you want to be treated yourself. And just don't do anything spammy or malicious that could get you in trouble in the long run.
And, you know, I'll add to what Brandon said there. I found that one of your greatest tools is often silence. It really does take two people to have an argument, two people to have a debate. And you're welcome to engage in debate. I want to ask Brandon's opinion on my, I call it social media smackdown, because we do some social media debates just to kind of stir up some interest and stir up some controversy, because we're here to tackle big mental health, psychological topics. And we find in social media that there's just a lot of garbage out there. And it really amazes me. But I don't reply to everything. If I typically take a lipstick and pig approach. Never try putting lipstick on a pig. It just frustrates you and annoys the pig. If what you're going to say is not going to be valued by the person in front of you, if they're just a crank, or I guess, what do you call those folks, a troll? If they're just out there wanting to stir up trouble, then why waste your time? You know, you have more valuable things to do. But for me, if it's going to be a good, healthy debate, I'm very interested in what people think about psychological mechanisms and techniques and treatments and counseling and different theories. If they're coming from a place of being genuine. But if they're just wanting to pick a fight and be a crank, then I've got, you know, better things to do. I'm just here to correct pseudo psychological misinformation. But what do you think about strategically stirring up some controversy?
It helps you potentially go viral, get engagement, get more followers sometimes. But sometimes you get the wrong followers when you're doing it that way. But definitely get you some publicity. And like people say, any publicity is good publicity, but I don't think having negative publicity is the best, but it'll definitely get you more eyeballs on your content. And because the more engagement you get, the more people see that content on social media. That's why I was saying, if you're not being social on social media, it's going to be tough to grow, because the more you engage and the more you're going to grow and get people talking and responding. And that's what social platforms want you to do, is engage with other people and build those relationships, whether they're positive or negative, but just have engagement, have some responses. Don't just be posting and not responding. That's not what they want. So the more you engage, the more you're going to be able to get growth on your accounts, because the way social works is someone engages with your post, that post is going to be shown to the explore page of all their followers potentially. So that's how you get that organic growth, is by getting them to like your content, then that gets shown to your explore page, their explore page, and which is then shown to all their followers.
Now, Brandon, you have your own, you have a business, but you have your own social media accounts. And which one would you say that you're most active on personally?
Probably Instagram, I would say, because I like skateboarding, and Instagram is huge for skateboarding and sports and just an easy way to consume that kind of information.
And what are some things that that really, I don't know, maybe irritate you about Instagram, or things that you see people post on Instagram, some real turn-offs for you?
Just the reach is so low. Engagement is so low. I had half the amount of followers a couple years ago than I did now, and I'm getting much less engagement than I did back then than I do now. So that one is pretty frustrating, because it's a play-to-play platform, and that reach and engagement is just so low nowadays that it doesn't even really make sense to grow organically. I mean, you still want to get some organic growth, but it's just so tiny. It's so hard to get that growth nowadays. And getting in contact with anyone on Instagram is tricky if they have any issues or get your account hacked and things like that, which I see happen all the time. It's tough to get it back because there's not really any support feature. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a form that you can fill out, but other than that, it's really tough and tough to get a hold of them and to get any response out of them.
We've had our account blocked a few times. And it's not because we're being controversial. It just kind of went dark. And we, within an hour or two, we got this email. It could have been not an email, but a communication. It might have been an email. I really don't remember. But with them apologizing, saying it was blocked by accident. We didn't mean to block your account. Oh, well, it's back live. Knock yourself out. But it seemed like kind of a weird thing. But I want to comment on the influencers and the followers and the reach. And this is just my own hypothesis for the listeners here. And Brandon, please correct me if I'm wrong, but if you hear what Brandon just said, all those so-called influencers that reach you, they pay to do that. They may accidentally reach you and they didn't have to pay for that, but in large part, influencers will pay to have the reach that they do. And that's meaningful. Why? Well, because of their intent at reaching you. Why would they want to reach you? Well, they want to sell you something. So I tell people psychologically, be very, very careful on social media when you see apps that are hawking psychological information. Here's a new mental health app. Here's a new mental health book, because they may have just reached you by paying for that. And my point is, not everybody that pays to reach you has your best interest at heart. Maybe they just want your money. Now, hopefully they want both. Hopefully they want your money, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, we do this podcast for free. We don't charge for this, and we didn't pay Brandon to be on the episode, and Brandon's not paying us to be on the episode. We do this as a community service, but we do mental health, and we do lifestyle coaching and mind management coaching and all that. But our point is, be very, very leery, because someone may want to sell you something, and we live in a capitalistic society, but also that doesn't mean that they have your best interest at heart. Just because they're big on social media, number one, doesn't mean they're an expert. Number two, therefore, doesn't mean they know what they're talking about. Number three, doesn't mean they can really help you. And of course, the biggie is that they may not have your best interest at heart at all. And that's why we do what we do. I see all kinds of just really terrible woo-woo social media pseudo-psychological things out there, and I think you just have to be careful. Brandon, what about in the genres and the segments that you serve? Have you found that to be true, that there's a lot of noise out there and people pay for stuff that's just really not helpful?
Yeah, that's why you always check them out online and make sure that they have – well, check out if it's on social media, you can check out their comments, see how people respond to the comments on their posts. And it's all negative sentiment, then maybe they're not the best person to work with, or it's all positive and too positive. Maybe they paid for all those fake comments. But if you're looking at them across the board and looking at them, let's say they found you on Instagram, then I would check them out on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on Pinterest, on LinkedIn, on TikTok, and see if they have accounts on these how people respond, search them on Google, look at their website. They don't have a website. I'd definitely be very skeptical because it's pretty easy to make a website nowadays. And if you don't have a website, it doesn't look like you're a real business to some people. It might lose that credibility. So especially because a website, you get full control of it and you own it and have that forever. Whereas social media, they're just kind of renting space off these platforms and they can be taken down at any time. But just checking them out on, just search their name on Google, see the reviews. If they have a Yelp or any of these other platforms that showcase reviews, try to see what other people are saying about them. But don't believe whatever you see online, because unfortunately most of the stuff is fake. But if you weed through all this fake stuff and find the real stuff, it takes time, but you can get through all of that and see what's really authentic and who has your best interest in mind.
Wow. And in working with the clients that you work with, what are some of the hurdles, the main hurdles they have to overcome in order to kind of master or become more proficient at using social media?
I'd say maybe having like a content calendar, something where they could schedule everything out ahead of time, like Hootsuite or Buffer, something like that, where they could stay ahead of everything and plan out everything ahead of time. And they could schedule out all their posts for that month, that year, within a couple of hours and have it all ready to go. And then they could focus on engaging with people instead of worrying about posting all the time. And then they could worry about the social aspect of it. And that is one that is so very important, is using a content calendar and a scheduler tool to help save time.
Okay. Well, and I want to ask you, kind of coming into the home run of the episode, we've got another couple of special questions we've curated just for Brandon and his expertise. But Brandon, imagine that you're talking to a class of third graders about social media. What are some of the key things you'd share with them to have fun but stay safe?
I would say just view, post what you want to post, and then leave social media. If you want to stay safe, just post what you want to post and then get off of it, because there's no way to stay safe on social media. I mean, you can put up parental controls, I guess. I've never really used those, so I'm not sure how effective or how they work exactly. But I know there's different settings that you can limit what's shown, especially for younger kids, so they're not seeing all these crazy social media posts. But I'd say that would be the most important, is have the parents talk to the parents first, make sure they put all those parental controls in place, and then let the kids kind of roam free, because for the most part, there shouldn't be any issues when you have those settings on. Once you take those settings off, then you're in just the wild, wild west where anything can be posted and there's a lot less scrutiny, and it's a lot tougher to manage millions and tens of millions of posts every second that go up on Instagram or these platforms. So they can't control everything. They try to, but they're not able to. So the parental controls will definitely help weed out a lot of that stuff that's not made for children, and hopefully send them in the right direction. But I'd say if they want to stay safe, just don't even use it. Just post on it and get off of it, because no matter what, it's going to cause them to be jealous of other people and get that FOMO, and does a lot of negative impact implications. But just depends on how strong that kid is as well, and how strong their mind is, and how they understand that all this is just a facade and not reality.
You know, guys, I want to be a bit of a shock jock when I say what comes next. And that is, as a parent, but also someone who's been in the psychology profession for, I think, about 38 years now. And if your kid is going to be on social media, and most kids are, you must be a helicopter parent to keep them safe. You should no more take your eyes off of what kids are doing on social media than you should take your eyes off of a kid in a room with a loaded gun. I was on social media, as I said, I do these debates, and I had someone who really took such offense at it, me correcting some little tidbit of pseudo psychological nonsense, that they literally typed back in the response, "You should go kill yourself." And Brandon, for something like that, would parental control stop somebody from even saying that in a comment?
You can probably block all comments. You can block comments that have negative words, so anything that has profanity or the word die or death and things like that. So you can set all that stuff up. But yeah, unfortunately, the best way to do it is not even be on social, because it's inevitable that something's going to happen like that. And
yeah,
especially with younger kids, it's tough. They're so impressionable, and they're just going to believe whatever they read online, just like most adults believe whatever they read online, which
yeah,
I tell them.
Yeah. And you young people that are listening, let me put it to you this way, and I'll be a bit of a shock jock, Doc, to say this, but it's just to help you make a point. just because someone says something to you on social media, number one, doesn't mean it has value. And number two, it doesn't mean that you have to go do it. Now, imagine that somebody on social media texted you or put in the comments, go to the public restroom and eat the feces in the toilet. Would you go do that? Well, you would say, oh, that's gross. That's disgusting. I'd never do that. Now, I said that first because what I want to say second, imagine that person says, go kill yourself. You see, that has no more value than, hey, go eat feces out of the toilet. But I know young people that will hear or read that in social media and they will think, oh, maybe I should go kill myself. Well, just because you see it written, and that is literally pixels in a pattern on a page. Just because you see pixels in a pattern on a page, a comment on a social media platform means what? Absolutely nothing. What did I do with a person that said, you should just go kill yourself? I reported that to the platform. I normally wouldn't do that, but I did in that case, not because I was in danger, but because I believe if they say this to me, they may say this to some young kid and they may take it seriously. So it's very, very important to consume your social media the way that you consume chicken. You don't swallow it whole. You know, you eat the meat that's good for you. You spit out the bones, pull out the bones. Social media has a lot of bones in it. Brandon, thank you so much for being with us. I've got another couple of questions and we'll let you get back to your busy schedule. But any parting, just big social media hacks that you use personally to optimize your own experience on social media?
T-ballers, time to quit your lollygagging. Get out of the dugout, onto the field, and live the art life.
I would cross-promote everything. So when I post on Instagram, I usually want to share that on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Pinterest and LinkedIn, and using tools like Zapier, which is a free tool. It'll cross-promote all your social media content from one platform to another, and that saves me hours of time every single day. So that's one thing that a lot of people are not cross-promoting and using tools to help automate things, because with social, if you're trying to do everything, it takes a lot of time, especially if you're just doing it by yourself. So you need some tools to help out and automation to help save you time and headaches. And using tools like Zapier, Hootsuite, Buffer saves me tons of time every single day.
And you can do that whether you're a business or a person that just wants a bigger followership. And if you think that you have a message that can change lives, I encourage you to get out there and take some of these tips and techniques that Brandon talked about and share the important, healthy message that you have. If you don't have an important, healthy message, if it's not healthy, then, well, keep that to yourself. Do us all a favor. We've talked about the wild and wacky world of social media, some social media insider secrets, using social media as a tool without it taking over your life, and some of these little known social media hacks. And if you want some more information from Brandon, you can check out his podcast episodes, his guest appearances, and his webinars on his YouTube channel. I think, Brandon, could they just type in Brandon Leibowitz and that would pull you up, or is there something special they need to do?
Yeah, well, I actually did create a special gift for everyone. So if they go to my website at SEOoptimizers.com, that's SEOoptimizers.com/gift. They can find that there, along with my contact information and all my social media handles. And I've also thrown up a bunch of classes I've done over the years that show step-by-step how to do a lot of stuff that we talked about. So if they want to see that, they can watch that for free. And that's all on that SEOoptimizers.com/gift.
Hey, thank you so much. That's fantastic. You guys write that down, rewind, write that down, and go and grab that gift. And we look forward to your experience. You can put your experience with this in the comment section on this particular episode. And we're going to be making a special commemorative Brandon Leibowitz mug and show shirt. If you want to keep his message top of mind, you can go to the Therapy Bites store and grab you a mug and grab you a t-shirt reminding you to stay safe in the quicksand of social media. And one last thing, Brandon, I'm going to go under the deep, dark recesses of the therapy couch, literally, and pull something out there, a question just for you on your way out of the episode today.
We journey now with Doc Heath as he submerges with our special guest into the depths beneath the dark recesses of the therapy couch.
Your question for the day is, okay, imagine that you have a dream, your worst nightmare about social media. What would that worst nightmare be about social media?
Probably getting my accounts deleted would be a big nightmare for all that time and effort that you put into it, because they could take you down at any time and you don't have any control of that. If a bunch of people want to report you, and they could report you, and it could be a fake report, but if enough people do it together and team up, they could take you down. So it's pretty easy for accounts to be taken down, and getting them back up is very, very hard. So that's one thing I want to avoid, and not do anything that would jeopardize my account or my client's accounts or anybody's account, because getting them back is so much work and doesn't always happen. And you put so much time and effort into growing these accounts, so you don't want to just have them completely lost, because most people don't back it up. They don't know what images or videos they posted, and they might have their whole family album up on Instagram, and Instagram takes them down. They lost all those images because they didn't have them saved somewhere else.
Wow. What's the best way for folks to plan ahead and prevent that?
Just have the pictures saved on your phone before you upload them. Don't just take a picture and have it straight on the Instagram platform. Take a picture with your cell phone and then upload to Instagram. Don't be using Instagram to take pictures or videos, because that it saves directly to Instagram and you don't have that extra copy. I'm sure there's websites that will let you download all your images and videos off these platforms, so they can do that pretty quickly and easily. I don't know any off the top of my head, but I'm sure if you just search around Google, there's a ton of them out there, because people have thought about this have this happen way too often, unfortunately.
I've never thought about that. That's great advice and very psychologically revealing for somebody whose business is SEO and social media. This is what folks that are social media aficionados have nightmares about, all their content being lost. That's great, man. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's been such a fun episode having you here, and wish you the best of luck. Hey, you T-Ballers, thank you for joining us, and we will catch you on the next episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
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 Guest analyst Dr. Jung A. Tart reporting for Art Lab's psychological couch duty for Dr. Freudnut on sabbatical, being psychovacationalized. High-tech hitman Brandon Leibovitz's PMS performance places him in the 97th percentile on the PMS's MMS, Media Mastery Scale. This indicates an exquisitely estimable degree of googolomosis in special guest Brandon's cortical crevices, under commendably copacetic media maneuvering mindset. Overall, Internet Wiz Leibovitz's PMS psychosilly metric assessment results present a picture of an individual dispositionally directed down the dark passages of perilous cyberspace rabbit holes, yet quintessentially qualified, possessing a proclivity for exploration of the Internet's electronic jungles. This skillful soul likely has a preeminent prognosis of proficient prodigiousness in the near future, until the equivocally enigmatic electronic features of his psyche have been psychomologically analyzed and exorcised. It is my considered conclusion that social media master Leibovitz be prescribed no less than a 310 milligram IE, intra-electronicular dose of Googolovia, and a 2300 milligram IS, intrasocial dose of PRN social amide, to curtail any breakthrough encrypting cognitions. Dr. Jung A. Todd, guest Shrinkstigator, Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Grab some of this episode's guest merchandise, specially designed to help keep this episode's message top of mind in your life. Don't forget friends and family members who could use an Art Lab mental boost too. Just go to therapybites.myshopify.com.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, are you winning at work but losing at life? Today's guest, Dan Howington, is a life realignment specialist, and he's here to reignite your passion for something bigger than self alone on an episode we call Something Bigger Than Self, The Psychology of Service, coming up next on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by... Someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, endorsed, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. Soap for short. Warning. Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming reliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead. Don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.